Welcome to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne. Have you ever felt like the different parts of your life had you navigating more than one world at a time? Many of us have a life at home and a life at school or work, and we work to bridge those different worlds, navigating each of those environments while all the time being the same authentic person. You know, when I was a young man, I lived in Argentina for a couple of years. And while I lived there, there were things I didn't want to lose about being an American kid from Utah, and also things I wanted to embrace about my Argentine home. And I tried my best to live richly in both of those worlds, learning the language, coming to love the food and the books and the people around me in my Argentine home, and also to carry with me the things I loved about being a kid from the American West. And we got a story for you today from Jasmine Cardenas, who performs and teaches all over the place as a storyteller and does much of it in two languages, English and also Spanish, the language of her Colombian heritage. And she'll tell us the story of how she came to be a bilingual storyteller, how she came to navigate those two worlds in her life. Here's Jasmine, recorded live in the Appleseed studio. The story she calls How I Became a Bilingual Teller.
I love telling stories in both languages, English and Espanol. And people often ask me, how did you become a bilingual teller? And I'll tell you, I didn't set out to become a bilingual teller. It kind of happened on accident. When I was in college, I was super nervous because I was studying to be a theater artist. Now, what you need to know is that my mommy and papi came from Colombia, South America. And if you are an immigrant's kid, you select engineering, you can be a doctor, you can even be a nurse. But theater is not usually at the top of the list. And so about a month before graduation, I was so nervous. Oh, God, please, please help me, Lord. Please, God, help me to not become like penniless and living in mommy and papi's basement. And I begged the Lord to please bless me with a job. And I needed to be specific, God. I really love performing, so I want a job that allows me to perform. And I really love kids, so I want to be able to work with kids. And I had gotten a double major in children's theater so that I could work with kids regularly. And I really want health care. And I really want to be able to pay for a car. So if I could get enough money to like do all those things, we're good, okay? I don't think I'd be a very good assistant living inside of four walls helping someone on a computer because computers are not my thing, and I'd be a terrible hostess or waitress. I don't want to throw food on people. Please, 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 please. So I prayed that prayer, and about a year to the day that I prayed that prayer, I landed the job as the Cole McCormick Story Bus Educator. And what that meant was that I was driving a vehicle that was bigger than a city bus, but smaller than a semi-truck. And it was a museum on wheels. Inside, it was decked out with the Three Little Pigs homes, the straw house and the brick house and that little wooden house. And the kids could pick apples from the apple tree and send it down the conveyor belt. And I would go into the classrooms with my trusted partner, and we would tandem tell Amy Ressler, a wonderful storyteller. She and I would hit the road running, and we showed up at a school in one of our first schools that we went to on the north side of Chicago in Albany Park. And the teacher greeted us, "Oh, I'm so happy that you've arrived. Our children love stories. They're very good listeners." Well, except Elmer. He never listens, but you just keep going. Don't worry. And sure enough, we sat down, and there on the carpet, on the rainbow carpet, were all the children. And one little body was turned its back to us and seemed to be whittling a hole into the carpet with a pencil. And we began, "Once upon a time, there was a great mama sow. And she had 1, 2, 3 baby pigs. And they went walking and walking and walking down the road. Walking and walking and walking down the road. And that first baby pig got to an area with large growth of yellow stuff growing and thought, oh, what could I build here? I could build my house right here. And so I got all of the kids to help me to build and bunch and scrunch and crunch all that straw to build a house. Everyone except for that one little boy with like curly hair kind of reminded me of my little brother. And Amy and I were going back and forth, and we were trying to get him in because we started creating things to be real physical. Everyone became big, tall trees and teeny, tiny bushes. Big, tall trees and teeny, tiny bushes, and they were picking sticks. And then I told them, get your hammer, get your nail. What little boy doesn't like a hammer? And we started, help me build the house. Nothing. I could not get this little boy to jump into the story. He was really intent on whittling a hole. And finally, that big character entered the story. And he came up to that house and looked in the window. And when I said, cochinito, cochinito, déjeme entrar, he turned around and his eyes were as big as saucers. And I turned to my partner, Amy, and her eyes were as big as saucers too. And I said, cochinito, cochinito, déjeme entrar. And that little boy yelled it with me. And then Amy said, not by the hair on my chinny chin chin. And I said, yes, soplaré, and I'll huff. Y soplaré, and I'll puff. And I'll blow your house down. Tumbaré su casita. And that little boy huffed and puffed and huffed and puffed. And we kept going back and forth in English and Spanish and English and Spanish. And by the end of the story, all the pigs and wolves were bilingual. And when the teacher walked up to us, she said, oh my gosh, I have never seen Elmer so engaged. And it took me back to when I was a kindergarten student, sitting in my school, St. Benedict's, and I was drawing with big fat crayons, one of my favorite things to do in life. And my teacher had called my parents in for a meeting, and I thought I was in trouble. And when my mom and dad came in, she said, hello, Mr. and Mrs. Cardenas, come on in, have a seat. It is a joy to have Jasmine and her brother, Fabian, in school with us. Thank you so much for choosing our school. But it is really important that Jasmine and Fabian learn English. So if you all could help us by speaking English at home, and then we'll teach them English at school, they will learn so much faster. And I didn't quite know everything she was saying, but I knew it wasn't good because my dad stood up and was starting to get a little red in the face, and that usually meant he was kind of angry at me. So I thought I was in trouble, and he said, my wife and I, we come from Colombia. We speak Espanol, and we don't know English. You teach English, and we speak Espanol. How we speak with our children if we don't know English? Señora, ¿sí? And because my dad stood up for our language that day is the reason I know that I'm still bilingual today and that I still held on to Spanish. I'll tell you that when I went back to Elmer's classroom, because with the story bus, we would go 3 times a year, the second visit, I noticed that the teacher had added things in the room. There was labeling, ventana, window, puerta, door. And little Elmer was becoming a leader, she said. He was really involved and engaged in the activities. And by the third time that I went to that school, little Elmer came running up to me, holding a book in his hand. And he said, Miss Jasmine, mire, como mi familia, like my family. And he was holding a book about making tamales. Because for his familia, tamales are a special family treat at Christmas. And I know that that teacher dug deep inside to find a way to reach little Elmer. And I'm so grateful for her and grateful for my own teachers that were willing to sacrifice a little, put in the extra effort to welcome us into their classrooms. That is why I am a bilingual teller. Thanks.
That was Jasmine Cardenas with How I Became a Bilingual Teller. Listening to this story takes me to kind of an unusual place, maybe, in my thoughts. I think about Jasmine and her desire to remain attached to her Colombian heritage through its beautiful language, and how her desire to retain that important aspect of her family character has opened up the rich panorama of her work. And as I listened to Jasmine, I wondered, what are the character traits about me that are important to carry into a world that might be hesitant at first to embrace them? And this may sound a little weird, but I thought about how my whole life I've been an introvert. And you may not even believe that, but the people who know me best know how important it is for me to recharge outside of a group, to be alone with my thoughts, to work things out in the quiet of my own mind, in a world that's sometimes pretty noisy, too noisy for me to think very well. It's a little unusual to say that, maybe, as I make my living in ways that have me, you know, very much out loud, on stage, telling stories, making music. How do I make one world out of those two worlds? The big, out loud world of my work and the quiet, inward world of my thoughts and conversations. That has sometimes been a challenge for me, a source of some anxiety even, especially when I was younger. But I've come to think that maybe the introspection of that introversion that's so much a part of me gives a kind of thoughtful life to the more out loud parts of me. Certainly, it has made my conversations with you here on the show feel more like nourishing, intimate chats with one or two friends, and less like performances before thousands. You know, I like both parts of myself, and living authentically in the quiet parts of my life, as well as the out loud parts of my life, is something I'm better at than I used to be. I think that's important. You know, for sure, I don't look at my desire for thoughtful quiet as something I need to somehow grow out of. It's a language I need to understand and speak well, just like I need to understand and speak the out loud language of so much of the world around me. I didn't always understand that as well as I do now. And maybe I'll understand it even better as I live more. And perhaps unusually, that's where Jasmine's story about being bilingual took me. Where did it take you? And who will you take along? In our next story, our friend Motoko, a Japanese storyteller who lives in Massachusetts, brings us an old Chinese folktale called The Golden Eye of the Fighting Cricket. And in this story, a caring son finds a mystical way to help his parents. Here's Motoko, recorded live in the Appleseed Studio.
So I would like to tell you a very special story from old China. And this story is about a very special sport. It's called cricket fighting. You see, people in old China admired crickets for their beautiful singing voices and considered them to be intelligent and brave. About 1,000 years ago, during the Song Dynasty, the sport of cricket fighting began among the nobles. The emperors and rich merchants and judges, they all collected crickets that were big, strong, and quick, and trained them to fight. Soon, the sport spread among the poor as well, especially because a strong, well-trained cricket was worth a lot of money. Peasants, laborers, and their children spent all their spare time looking for crickets with thick bodies, long legs, and strong chirping sounds. In battle, they use an open container with flat bottom for the battle arena. Two crickets face each other in it. The trainers would poke the crickets with pieces of straw to get them excited. Then the two insect warriors go at each other, snapping their jaws and waving their antennae. Sometimes the cricket can flip his opponent clear across the arena. Well, once upon a time, about 600 years ago, in a little village not too far from the capital city of Peking, there lived a young man named Mr. Li. Mr. Lee worked as a low-ranking office clerk for the local government with no hopes for promotion. He lived with his wife in a little hut and also with their 7-year-old son, Jin. Mr. Lee worked under a very mean supervisor named Mr. Bao. Mr. Bao always made Mr. Lee do the most difficult or tedious job and took credit for his work. One day, Mr. Bao brought his own fighting cricket to the office to show it off. This cricket, in this special bamboo cage, was nearly 2 inches long. "You may call him Big Boss," Mr. Bao pompously told the workers. He placed the bamboo cage on the high shelf for everyone to admire. Well, that day during lunch, Mr. Lee was eating and talking with his colleagues when one of them asked, "So what do you think about Mr. Bao's fighting cricket?" "He's big and mean, but cowardly, just like his owner," Mr. Lee said, chewing his food. "What did you say?" They heard the booming voice behind them, and it was Mr. Bao. "Nothing, sir. I didn't say anything," Mr. Lee stammered, his face red with embarrassment.
"Nothing, sir. I didn't say anything," Mr. Bao mocked.
"Who do you think you are, Lee, bad-mouthing me and my cricket? If you think you're such a hot shot, why don't you bring in a cricket of your own? We will have a match in 2 weeks, and when you lose, consider yourself fired." Well, now Mr. Lee regretted what he had said, but it was too late. His colleagues had sympathy for him, but they were also afraid to lose their jobs. Mr. Lee went home and told his wife what had happened. "If I lose my job, how are we going to eat?" he wailed. "My dear husband, you cannot afford to lose your job," Mrs. Lee said. "We must find a suitable cricket and win this fight." "But dear wife, I don't know anything about training crickets." "Don't worry, I have an idea," Mrs. Lee said, as she took off her jade bracelet. It was the only piece of jewelry she owned. It was a wedding gift from her mother. "I have a cousin who's into cricket fighting. I will give him this and seek his advice."
"But dear wife, I don't want you to give away your mother's gift."
"Dear husband, you cannot afford to lose your job. It's important for you to keep your job. Otherwise, we will not be able to give our son good education, and he will never amount to anything. This is for our son's future." Mr. Lee relented. The two of them went to Mrs. Lee's cousin, who agreed to help. So Mr. Lee and the cousin went into the woods nearby and caught several crickets. They kept the biggest one, about 1.25 inches long, and named it Blue Wing. The cousin taught Mr. Lee what to feed and how to train the cricket. Mr. Lee kept Blue Wing in a little clay pot and fed it bits of crab meat, water chestnuts, and sliced apples. "Crouch like a tiger. Listen for your enemy," he would instruct, trying to teach the cricket how to stalk its opponent. Or he would say, "Charge like the wind, forge straight ahead." His 7-year-old son, Jin, watched closely by. Well, a dozen days passed quickly, and Mr. Lee had done everything he could to prepare Blue Wing for the battle. Now he just had to hope for the best. But 2 days before the scheduled match, something terrible happened. You see, the boy, 7-year-old Jin, who had grown quite fond of Blue Wing, wanted to look at it while his parents were out. So he reached up for the clay pot and he opened the lid. Suddenly, the cricket jumped out, trying to escape. In his haste to catch the cricket, the boy accidentally squashed it. Now, Blue Wing was dead. "Look what you've done,"
his mother came home and screamed, "Your father is going to kill you!" The boy burst into tears and ran out of the house. When Mr. Lee came home from office that evening and heard what had happened, he was devastated. But his anger quickly turned into fear and worry because they realized their son was missing. They had no idea where the boy was, and it was already dark outside. As Mrs. Lee went all over the village searching for the boy, Mr. Lee went into the woods nearby. He came to the edge of a steep rock cliff and peered down. By the light of his lantern, he found his boy lying unconscious at the bottom of the cliff. He scrambled down and carried the boy home as his wife went to fetch the village doctor. "Your son must have hit his head very badly when he fell off the cliff. Will he live? Please don't let him die." "I cannot say. Just do not move him, whatever you do." Just then, they heard a strong chirping sound of a cricket. It was coming from the boy's clenched hand. They loosened the boy's fist and found a small cricket, barely an inch long. The cricket sat still and sang. Mr. Lee noticed that it had golden eyes. "He must have fallen off the cliff trying to catch this cricket. I am so sorry, my dear husband. It's all my fault. I should not have yelled at him like that." "No, my dear wife, it's my fault. I'm the one who brought this mess onto us." The boy was still unconscious the next evening, and the parents were worried sick. The match was scheduled the next day, and they did not even have a cricket. How would they pay for their son's medical care if Mr. Lee lost his job? Then Mr. Lee saw it again, the little cricket with golden eye. He was sitting on his son's chest. He carefully caught it and put it in the clay pot. The cricket chirped even more loudly, as if trying to cheer him up. "I will face my opponent tomorrow," Mr. Lee muttered quietly. He named the cricket Golden Eye and brought him to Mr. Bao's house the next day. All their colleagues and neighbors had gathered to watch. Mr. Bao set up a large, flat-bottomed ceramic dish on his porch for the battle arena. In a revered manner, he let his big cricket out of the bamboo cage. Then he took a look at Mr. Lee's cricket and burst out laughing. "Ha ha ha! That puny thing is going to fight my cricket? You're out of your mind, Lee!" Mr. Lee said nothing. The two crickets faced each other. The big boss scuttled around. Golden Eye sat still, without moving an antenna. "Look, he's so scared," Mr. Bao taunted and poked Golden Eye with a piece of straw. Suddenly, Golden Eye charged like the wind. The two crickets locked their antennae. Big Boss tried to come on top. Then Golden Eye flipped Big Boss clear across the arena. Big Boss tried to run away, and Golden Eye chirped loudly as if announcing his own victory. "Golden Eye wins! He's amazing!" Everybody cheered. Mr. Lee could not believe his eyes. Mr. Bao quickly recovered his cricket, his face red in anger and humiliation. But just then, everyone saw fluttering of black and white wings. A neighbor's rooster had come up onto the porch and tried to peck at Golden Eye. "No! Stop!" Mr. Lee screamed. "Let him eat it!" Mr. Bao taunted.
But before either of them could move, Goldeneye jumped out of the ceramic dish. The rooster quickly caught up with it and trying to stomp on the cricket. Then the next thing people saw was the rooster shaking his own head violently. Quicker than lightning, Goldeneye had leaped up onto the rooster's comb and was biting it hard. Finally, Mr. Lee caught hold of the rooster and carefully recovered Goldeneye, and he put him back into the clay pot. Everyone applauded. Everyone except Mr. Bao.
"You're fired anyway, Lee," he hissed.
"You don't need to fire me. I quit," Mr. Lee said calmly. "I should be at least as brave as my cricket." But when he got home, he was saddened to find that his boy was still in a coma. "My dear wife," Mr. Lee said, "please allow me to leave our son in your care for a while. I will find a way to make it right by him." The next day, Mr. Lee went to the village magistrate to file a grievance against Mr. Bao. Then he asked the magistrate for help. This story of cricket fighting the rooster had spread quickly and had reached the magistrate's ears.
"I am going to introduce you to an old friend of mine," the magistrate said. "He is a high court judge in Pekin, and he loves cricket fighting."
So Mr. Lee, with Goldeneye, traveled to the capital city to meet the judge. The judge was thrilled to see him.
"I am in charge of the Imperial Cricket Fighting Tournament, and I surely could use your service."
The judge not only bought Goldeneye for a large sum of money, but also hired Mr. Lee as the Imperial Cricket Trainer. So for the next 3 months, Mr. Lee lived in the capital city of Pekin and trained Goldeneye, only occasionally receiving words from home about his son, who was still alive, but still in a coma. Goldeneye proved to be a magnificent fighter. In front of the emperor and the nobles, he fought and won every match for the total of 888 matches. His name became famous throughout the capital city, and paintings and music and poetry were created as a tribute to the little champion cricket. Finally, the emperor allowed Goldeneye to retire in high honor. He was given to the emperor's daughter, who would take good care of him and enjoy his singing. "Do you wish to stay here and train other crickets?" the emperor asked Mr. Lee. "Your Majesty, I wish to go home and take care of my own son." The emperor released Mr. Lee from his duty as the imperial cricket trainer and appointed him to be the chief commissioner of the local government back home. When he came home, everybody welcomed him back. And guess who was assigned to organize a magnificent banquet for Mr. Lee? That's right. Mr. Bao. But when Mr. Lee finally came back to his house, his wife came running out saying, "He's awake! He's awake! Our son is awake!" You see, just 2 days before, Jin had regained consciousness, and the whole family embraced one another.
"I am so glad you are all right, son."
"Dad, I was asleep for a long time, and I had a very strange dream."
"What kind of dream did you have, son?"
"In my dream, I was a fighting cricket. I was small but quick, and I won many, many battles. I even fought a rooster once. I crouched like a tiger and charged like the wind, just like you said. And Dad, you were always there with me."
That was Motoko with Golden Eye of the Fighting Cricket. Have you ever felt like you had problems that were too big for you to face, like the folks in Motoko's story. Maybe you didn't have mystical help to find your way through, but you're clearly getting through it. I mean, here you are, right? How? And where has help come from? Are there things about you that are important to you that you don't want to lose as you move forward in the world, like Jasmine in her story? How have you tried to give a rich life to those important things? I bet you've got some stories. We hope you'll share them with the people you love. In fact, we hope you'll share the stories with us. We might share them on the show. You can tag us on social media or send us a message at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed, all one word, at byu.edu. We want to thank Jasmine Cardenas and Motoko for sharing their stories with us today. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to share some of your own. Turn everyday moments into extraordinary nature adventures with the BYU Radio podcast, Constant Wonder Kids. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts.